Well, if you had to use one word to describe each one of us in the room today, I think it would probably be the word consumer. That more than anything else, our lives are defined by what we consume, the products and the goods that we consume, that every single aspect of our life is shaped by what you buy, what you purchase every day, every week, and then what you consume. And this hasn't always been a prominent feature of our culture or of our lives. If you think about it, 100 years ago, I've got a few statistics for you. 100 years ago, there were 10,000 books published every single year in the U.S. Now, there are 400,000 books published every single year in the U.S. 100 years ago, a handful of people attended the very first movie in a small theater in New York City. Today, more than 200 million people go to the movies every year in our nation. 100 years ago, the average U.S. family spent only 20% of all of their expenses on non-essential items. And today, the average family spends 50% of all of their expenses on non-essential items in their lives. And that's because we have more money than we've ever had before. We've got more goods and products that are available to us than we've ever had before. We've got more choices than we've ever had. Think about it. On Netflix, you can go home and you can choose between 150,000 movies to watch instantly. The typical Walmart that you and I shop at has 175,000 items on our shelves, on their shelves at our disposal. You can go to Starbucks, and I can't even think about how many options there are, but we could probably go around the room today, and everyone could tell us their favorite customized drink at Starbucks, salted caramel mocha grande decaf. Is that yours? Well, that just killed the illustration. Holy cow. Okay, so maybe two of us would agree on our favorite drink, but there are so many choices that we have at Starbucks. And so whether it's the clothes you wear, whether it's the car you drive, whether it's the things that you download and purchase, I mean, think about the last week, what you purchased or bought. All of these things shape our identity. In fact, our primary satisfaction is found in buying and consuming different things. I mean, think about after 9/11, what President Bush said after those horrible attacks on our country. How do we get back to life as normal? How do we get back to being who we are as a society? He said, you go shopping. You go shopping. Now, I have a friend named Andy Crouch, and he studied this phenomenon of consumer culture a whole lot. And he says that he believes that the thing that is so unique and powerful about consumer culture, about us being consumers, is the way that it provides nearly instant gratification for us. So, a few examples, think about it. Last week, I needed a new sound bar for my TV. So, you know, the sound bar that you can put, because my old sound system was, I needed a new one, right? And so I could go online and I can look at the hundreds of examples of sound bars that are available that are made by all the different companies, and I could see which ones are rated the best. I can go on Amazon, see which ones are the most popular, which ones are the cheapest, which ones had the highest ratings. And then I could make the selection of which sound bar that I want from my own couch, and then I can go up to the right and I can hit purchase this item. And because Amazon is so gracious, they've allowed me to be a Prime member for only $80 a year, and they'll ship it to me with two-day shipping. And also because they're so gracious, they've agreed to store my credit card information on their site. So all I have to do is hit the button once, and boom, it's going to show up at my doorstep in 2 days, and the anticipation can build. Now, another example, if Janice and I want to go out to eat, and we want to think about the different places we want to go. Within 3 minutes of our house, literally three blocks we could walk to, we could go to a nice Indian restaurant that's really good. We could go a little cheaper. We could go to Chipotle or Schlotzky's, both good options. We could go to Lark Burger, which won the Denver Burger Battle for best burger in Denver, really good. Or we could just kind of go all out and go to Bojo's. And eat all the things we want. I mean, we have, and we can make this choice and be there in 5 minutes' time. Or maybe the best example of how consumer culture provides nearly instant satisfaction or gratification in our lives is I was on a blog site the other day, a couple months ago, and I was reading about a new band called The Vespers. And I thought, that's kind of a cool name. And I read a little bit more about them, and they're bluegrassy, folksy, Americana, alt-country-ish, and I like that. And so I Googled, and I found their website, and within a few seconds, I could listen to a preview of one of their songs, and then I could go to iTunes straight from that, and I could listen to a longer preview, and I thought, this is great. I'll buy the album, and I just have to go up and hit purchase this album. And Apple is really gracious, too. They store my credit card information on their website. So it's one click. It's really easy. And it takes 30 to 45 seconds to download to my computer. And so I'm waiting during those 30 to 45 seconds. From the minute I hit purchase, I just have to wait until I can hit play on that new MP3 song. And the first time I hit play, it was great. I mean, it was an amazing song. They have a song called Better Now. It's the first song on the album. It's awesome, and it was amazing to listen to it. Now, if you could draw a graph of what it looks like from my satisfaction over time, it looks a little bit like this. It starts with the purchase, and it's even high at that point. Because whenever you buy something, like before you even got it, you're kind of excited because you had all the choices and you got to choose. And so the anticipation is building. And then during those 45 seconds, in a matter of time, to the time I hit play on that MP3, I am gratified instantly. And we all know how this feels. I mean, when your favorite band comes out with their brand new album and you've been waiting for a few weeks, and the day that it comes, you purchase it and you download it immediately. And the first time you listen to the song, and it's awesome. And then the second or third time you listen to it, it's like there's some new things you hear, and it's still really good, and you like it. And then the eighth time, tenth time, it's pretty good. It's okay. And then like the 15th or 20th time, it kind of starts to trail off. And a few weeks or a few months go by, and pretty soon you don't really even listen to that album anymore. And that's how it works. In fact, this is really what the graph looks like. Because satisfaction begins to trail off after time. And we all know how this is. In fact, if I went to your iTunes library and I looked at all of the albums and songs you had, there's probably some albums and songs in there you never listen to anymore, right? In fact, there's some that if you listen to now, it would actually be unsatisfying. And that's just the way purchases often work. That's the way consumer products work. They provide instant gratification right up front. I mean, think about when you first drove off of the lot with the new car and how awesome it was. Think about the opening scene of any action adventure movie and how awesome it is. Think about the first bite of a Big Mac and how awesome it is for most of us. For me, at least, right? It provides instant gratification right up front. Your satisfaction goes off the charts. But here's the thing. What most consumer products don't provide is sustained gratification. In fact, most consumer goods are designed not to provide sustained satisfaction or gratification, because you see, the only thing they get from you when you purchase the product is the initial money you paid up front. So it's in their interest not to provide sustained satisfaction, because what happens when the satisfaction level trails off from something you bought, to get back up to being satisfying, what do you need to do? You make another purchase. And so this is what it looks like. And we make another purchase so that we can be satisfied again. And when that one begins to trail off, we go and we make another purchase. And when that one begins to trail off, we go and we make another purchase. And eventually, over time, this is what it looks like. Now, as long as you have money to keep making purchases, the pattern works, right? I mean, you remain satisfied. When you get tired of your car, you just buy or lease a new one. When you get tired of your wardrobe, you just go buy some new clothes. When you get tired of your shoes, your clothes, your phone, your laptop, your speaker system that helps your TV. Whatever it is, when you get tired of it, you just go buy a new one. There's always going to be a new one waiting there for you to bring your satisfaction level right back up. As long as you can keep buying things, you can remain satisfied. Now, this pattern isn't that different than the most basic human experience, and that's hunger. I mean, when we're hungry, we eat food, and we're satisfied. And then we get hungry again, and so we eat more food, and we get satisfied. And then we get hungry again, and so we eat more food, and we get satisfied. But what consumer culture does that is so amazing, it extends this pattern into every nook and cranny of our lives. What we drink, what we eat, what we drive, what we wear, what we download, what we look at on our phones. This is how consumer culture works. Satisfaction maintained by a pattern of purchases. Now, in reality, we need to alter this graph just a little bit, because a pattern of purchases rarely delivers a consistently high level of satisfaction. In fact, it probably looks a little bit more like this. You see, with every purchase, with every new product that we buy and we consume, our satisfaction actually goes down just a little bit. Because it's hard to find a movie that's better than every other movie you've ever seen. It's hard to recapture the feeling that you felt when you first bought your first car and drove it off of the lot. And so with every new album we purchase, it's more of the same. With every new product that we buy, it's more of the same. And it takes us back up for a little while. It gives us another kind of hit or shot of instant gratification. But the more stuff we buy, somehow, the less satisfying it ultimately is. And this isn't just the pattern of purchases. Some of you might recognize as well, this is the pattern of addiction. You see, when someone has their first high, it's a euphoric, amazing feeling. And then when they come down, they need to get back up again. And so they use again, and they have another high, and it's another euphoric, amazing feeling. And they have to use again to be satisfied again. And it's another high. But in truth, it's never as good as the first time. And they're always trying to get back to that instant gratification, that instant satisfaction that they initially felt, to try to reclaim that feeling. And if we're really realistic about how it looks, it's actually a little bit more like this. Because anyone, and some of us could definitely talk about this morning, anyone that's ever been addicted to a behavior or some kind of substance can tell you that at some point there really is no satisfaction. At some point, you're just trying to get back up to normal. At some point, you're just trying to get back up to baseline, and you get to the point where you're so hooked on it, you can't imagine life without this thing, and all you do is use this thing to just try to get back to where you were. But ultimately, it becomes deeply unsatisfying and actually destructive in your life. Now, for some of us, we know this is how addiction can work, and for many of us, this is how a pattern of purchases in a consumer culture can actually work, because it becomes so normal to maintain a certain level of satisfaction. It becomes so normal to get a new car every few years. It becomes so normal to get new clothes. It becomes so normal to upgrade from 4 to 4S to 5 whenever there's a new one that comes out. It's just, we can't imagine not having a phone that does all of the things that we used to live without. I mean, 3G, how slow can we be, you know? I mean, we can't even imagine life like that. And yet we're caught in a cycle, in a pattern of purchases. We've bought into it, and so we keep buying stuff, we keep buying things, we keep consuming them, because we think they'll provide the satisfaction that we're ultimately looking for. Now, You might be wondering where this is all going, and we'll get to the Bible in just a minute. But first, I want to tell you about a very different pattern towards the satisfaction that we all seek. And it's a pattern that's very different from the pattern of purchases, And it's best illustrated because it's not like playing an MP3 song. It's a whole lot more like playing the violin. And see, I imagine, Chuck, when you first started playing, I don't even know how to hold this thing. When you first started playing the violin, you were 6 years old, right? I imagine the first time that you pulled the bow across the strings, it wasn't very satisfying. I imagine that to your family, it wasn't very satisfying. I imagine there was no instant gratification the very first time that you played this instrument. In fact, I imagine that for weeks you played it and there was nothing satisfying about it. I imagine that you tried and you worked at it and you took lessons and days and weeks went by and there was nothing about it that was satisfying. In fact, if we could graph it, I'm guessing this is how it would have looked. But you stuck with it and you practiced. And you kept working. And it was hard, and I'm guessing your arm got tired. My arm is tired holding it for 10 seconds. And I'm guessing your hand got tired, and I'm guessing it took a lot of patience and diligence and hard work. And I'm guessing that at some point, months, maybe years down the road, one day you pulled the bow across the strings, and there was something that was satisfying. That it made a sound that sounded something like music, and the coyotes didn't start howling in the distance, and yeah, and the dog didn't go hiding, and then you learn how to play more notes, and then you learn how to put a song together, and then you knew how to arrange things, and then you knew how to improvise things, and I'm guessing that at some day we got to the point where I could hand this to you, and I could say, "Play us a beautiful song." let's just close in prayer. See, that was deeply satisfying. And you see, this is what illustrates what's so different than playing an MP3 from learning how to play the violin. In fact, the satisfaction looks like this. It goes in the opposite direction because Chuck will always know how to play the violin. He'll always be able to make amazing, beautiful music like that. In fact, maybe the satisfaction from playing something like that will never go away. It will never go down. And this is the pattern of practices, which is very, very different from the pattern of purchases. Now, a practice is really, really simple. A practice is anything that you endeavor to do that starts out difficult, maybe even painful, but over time, it becomes extremely satisfying. A practice can be learning how to cook. It can be learning a new language. It can be learning a new sport. It can be learning how to play an instrument, a musical instrument. It can be growing a garden. It can be making a piece of furniture. It can be learning how to be a pilot. And practices are so different from purchases in many ways. Practices essentially satisfy us in the long run, and purchases just satisfy us in the short run. As we said, purchases provide that initial jolt, that initial satisfaction or gratification, but they trail off quickly. But practices, they're rarely satisfying in the beginning. They take a long time, but in the long run, they're very satisfying. Purchases are about consuming something. Practices are about creating something. When you purchase something, you're usually consuming something that somebody else made. But when you take up a practice, it almost always results in something you've created. Maybe it's a vegetable garden. Maybe it's a work of art. Maybe it's a meal for dinner. Purchases don't usually change us. Practices almost always change us. You see, practices done consistently over time, they will always change us. They will expand horizons. They will offer us new abilities. If you learn how to speak Spanish, you can suddenly talk to and communicate and build friendships and relationships with so many people you never could have before. But purchases don't work that way. In fact, I could purchase violin music and I could listen to it for an hour every single day for the next 10 years and I could still not do anything. But if I practice learning how to play the violin for an hour every single day for the next 10 years, well, then I might get somewhere. Well, maybe not, but I might be able to learn how to play the violin in a way that's deeply, deeply satisfying because it changes something about me. Purchases inflate us. Practices humble us. You see, there's something about going online and looking at all the choices. It's like I have this God-like control over the world where I can just hit a button and instantly it's mine. Purchases inflate us in some sense, but practices, they humble us. They take time, they take work, they're difficult. They make us have patience. They help us to understand that we're not in control of everything, that we don't know everything, that some of the best things in life take a lot of work. Lastly, purchases enslave us, but practices liberate us. You see, practices liberate us to be able to do the kinds of things that we never could have done before. But purchases enslave us. I mean, the more we buy, the more we want to buy. And like any addiction in our lives, we end up in bondage to the very things that we think are going to make our lives better. Because if we're not consistently upgrading, if we're not consistently buying new things and staying up with the latest trends and getting the new technology and getting everything new, then and we end up being slaves to the very things that are supposed to be good for us. Now, the problem with a pattern of purchases is not just the money aspect. It's not just that we spend money on a lot of things that we don't need. It's not just the fact that if the statistics are true, most of us in this room are in debt because we've purchased things that we don't really need. Now, that's a big problem. And some of us need some serious help when it comes to how to manage our money. But ultimately, it's not just about the money. It's a heart issue. It's a perspective issue. It's about our desires and our wants, because we have become so accustomed, by living in a consumer culture, we've become so accustomed to looking for things that will provide instant gratification in our lives that it means we will never pursue things that we don't think will provide instant gratification, which means we'll never take the risks. We'll never invest the time. We'll never invest in the kinds of practices, the kinds of relationships, the kinds of things that aren't going to provide us instant gratification. Now, the reason this is all so important, and the reason we spent a while talking about it, is because following Jesus is a lot like a practice. It's not like a purchase. And in a world where everything is about instant gratification, about what my needs are and about what I get out of it, following Jesus is not easy. It doesn't work usually very well. It doesn't give us a lot out of it all of the time. Coming to church and hanging out with people that are messy and different isn't always easy. I don't always get a lot out of it. It's hard. It can be like a practice. Giving away of myself, volunteering my time where I might not get anything back from it is hard. It's difficult. Embracing Jesus' mission, which is all about giving up more of ourselves and giving it away to other people, that's not easy. That's hard. Let me tell you a quick story. One day in Jesus' ministry, this whole reality about purchases and practices became very, very clear. Jesus had actually been healing people in the weeks before, and talk about instant gratification. You're blind, you walk up to him, he spits in his hands, rubs it on your eyes, and suddenly you can see. And you didn't have to do anything for it. You didn't have to work for it. You didn't have to buy it. You didn't have to purchase it. It was free. He healed you. That's instant gratification. So Jesus is going around healing, and the crowds are starting to get bigger and bigger because, I mean, of course, this guy is healing people. And then one day the crowds get so big that he's teaching on the hillside, and everyone has gathered around him, and it's like he's been talking, and they're enraptured by everything he's saying, and so much time has gone by, they realize they didn't even bring any food with them, and so they're out of food, and they're hungry, and they have nothing, and Jesus just decides to feed them all, and he does another miracle, and he just gives them food, he gives them this huge meal, and the estimates are that there were 5,000 people there, not even counting women and children. It was this huge crowd, and he fed everybody. Well, the next day, the crowds follow him to the other side of the lake, and they come up to him, and they're begging him to do more, like, give us another miracle, show us another sign, like, give us a whole other meal. That thing you did yesterday was awesome. Do it again. They are hooked on the drug of Jesus. And this is when Jesus said to them in John chapter 6, Jesus answered, "Very truly, I tell you, you are looking for me, not because you saw the signs I performed, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life." You see, Jesus is basically saying, look, you just want more food. You don't really understand why I did the miracles or the signs that were behind them. You just want more food. You want what you can get out of this. And if there is a food that you should desire, but that's not given to you, a food that actually gives you abundant, never-ending, eternal life, a food that's life-giving, you have to work for that kind of food. To which they look back and they say, okay, what kind of work are you talking about for this food? And he says, well, it's simple. Just believe in me. Follow me. Trust me. Not what I provide for you, but me. trust in me. And look at how they answer him. So they ask him, what sign then will you give that we may see this, that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. So they say, okay, we'll do this work. Would you first just prove to us who you are, and then we'll be able to believe in you? How can you prove to us who you are? Do you remember that story, Jesus, from the Old Testament where the Israelites were in the wilderness and they got really hungry one day? And so they told Moses about it, and Moses fed them. He gave them a big meal. Why don't you do that for us again? You got to imagine Jesus is sitting there. He's going, you guys just don't get it, do you? Like, you're still kind of hooked on this, what I can give to you, what you can get out of it, how I can satisfy your immediate needs. Jesus is thinking if they really got it, they would understand what they really need. And they go back and forth, and John actually tells us that people grumble and they complain, just like the people back in the original story did. And they want Jesus to just do another miracle and provide another meal. And ultimately, Jesus finally says this to them, verse 53. Jesus said to them, very truly, I tell you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life in you. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise them up at the last day. In other words, when you die, you won't actually die. If you do this thing, I'll raise you up. You'll have new life even then. For my flesh is real food and my blood is real drink. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your ancestors ate manna and they died. But whoever feeds on this bread will live forever. Now, at this point, the disciples are freaking out a little bit. Because up until this point, the crowds have been following Jesus. He was the most popular he had ever been. In fact, they were even talking about making him the king. And so they were in the inner circle. They were the people who were listening to the music before everyone else was listening to the music. Like, they had gotten in early. They were part of the inner core. And so as Jesus' popularity arose, theirs would rise. And so this was awesome. Like, everything was going great. And then Jesus starts criticizing the people and talking about eating his flesh and drinking his blood. And it's like, Jesus, whoa, that's like, you're getting off message here. Like, that's not the sermon we all agreed on that you were going to give today. And yet Jesus is essentially saying to the crowds, you just want to consume something. You want a quick fix. You want another meal. You're basically just in this for what you get out of it. But if you really want true, eternal, life-giving, abundant life, well, then you will consume me. You will eat my flesh and drink my blood. Now, that's a little strange. That's weird. What does he mean? That's kind of gross. That's disgusting. What is he even talking about? The people didn't get it. Nobody could understand. The disciples certainly probably didn't understand. But maybe eventually when Jesus went to the cross, they finally understood. Or maybe the night before when he shared a meal with them and he broke the bread and he said, this is going to be like my body that's going to be broken for you. And this cup is like my blood that is poured out for you. This is life for you. Maybe then they understood. Or maybe just a few days later when Jesus would say, hey, if you want to be my disciple, you have to deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me. Maybe at that point, they began to understand what he was saying. But that day with that crowd, it was a hard and difficult teaching. It was Jesus basically saying, following me is a whole lot less like a purchase that you get instant satisfaction from and a whole lot more like a practice that takes work. It takes a life of practices that takes diligence, that takes sacrifice, that takes surrender, that takes time. Look at how the story ends. On hearing it, many of his disciples said, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" And from this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. Now, I want to be really clear in closing up today. Jesus invites all of us to follow him. That's an invitation for every single one of us. Even if you've been following him for 30 years, the invitation is still the same. Would you follow me today, this week, this month, this year? And if you're in one of those seasons or you're having one of those weeks where you're just tired, where you're worn out, where you're strung out, where you're stressed out, where you're at the end of your rope, where you've hit rock bottom, and you just need to come to him, he can give you grace and rest and peace and love and life. And so many of us in this room could raise our hands and testify to that and say, there have been times in my life where I've come to him and I've just given that to him, and he has freely given his grace to me in that moment. And maybe some of you are in that position right now, and the graphs and the consumer stuff and all that stuff doesn't really matter. Maybe all you need to hear today is that you can come to Jesus and find rest. But I think for most of us, we probably need to hear a harder message today. Because I think most of us approach religion, or we approach church, or we approach God, or we approach Jesus as consumers, first and foremost. Because we've been so shaped by the culture we live in. We've been so shaped by the products that we buy and consume every single day that it's almost impossible not to approach everything in our lives looking for instant gratification, what we can get out of it. But that's the pattern of purchases. And what if we, as a community, were different? What if we did something different? What if we said, we're going to be a people who are different? We're going to be countercultural. What if we said, we're going to try giving up purchases and taking up practices? I don't mean you can't spend money, you can't buy things, but I mean, what if we decided that we're going to give up finding our primary identity in the things we purchase and that satisfy us in the short run? And we would find our primary identity in the things that we practiced that were a little bit harder, but that might give us satisfaction in the long run. Well, what if we stopped looking for instant gratification in the things we purchased and we started anticipating the long-term gratification in the things we practiced? What if whenever we came to church, whenever we went to missional community, whenever we served or we volunteered, we stopped asking, we stopped thinking about it less like a purchase, what am I going to get out of this, and more like a practice, what am I giving to this? What if following Jesus is a whole lot less like playing an MP3 song and a whole lot more like learning how to play the violin? A practice that brings richness and grace and beauty to our souls, to our lives, to our community, to our world. What if today, during this Lent season, we decided to give up a pattern of purchases and take up a pattern of practices? Let me pray. Father God, we do want to find our ultimate satisfaction in you. And God, maybe the easiest and simplest prayer we could say today is help us to find that. Help us to look to you, not the things that we buy, not the things we wear, the things we drive, the things we listen to. Not that those things are evil, God, but help us to just find our satisfaction in you. God, we want more of you. We need more of you. We desire more of you in our souls, in our thoughts, in our perspectives, and in our lives. Help us on this journey of faith as we follow you. Thank you.